It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond. Glad to be here with you. And with us right now, Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, dude?
What's up? How's it going? Beautiful Sunday afternoon here in the western part of the state.
Well, it's a beautiful day here in the eastern part of the state. And by the way, we have a missing co-host. So ATB out for Kyle from the Grange Barber. You know, like, I don't know about you, but it's kind of like he's gone off to summer camp, and he's like one of our podcast brothers, so feels kind of weird. He's actually doing some R&R. He's fine. We haven't suspended him yet from the podcast. It kind of feels like he's on a 4 or 5 day suspension, don't it?
Yeah, I'm sure he's behaving himself out there in Gatlinburg.
As much as he can. As much as Kyle from LaGrange can. I mean, he was on for people that know him, he was on a Skylift on Facebook Live the other night. You know, he's been going to all these different places. But in all seriousness, we're happy that he gets a little downtime. And it couldn't come at a worse time, though. We got a big breaking story. And I know, Bubba, we have a big show. When I say that's my adjective for today, big.
Yeah, we do. We'll be catching up with Peter Burns from the SEC Network and also host College Football Live at times on ESPN. So we look forward to catching up with him. We had him on a couple times last season. And so we'll take a look at football in the state of North Carolina with a lot of the coaching changes we had, four of them to be exact. So we'll talk about that, of course, the SEC, and then also a little bit about the national picture. And then we'll also have a special story that we'll touch on some breaking news as of late Friday night or early Saturday morning.
Well, we normally have a round table, and I think, Bubba, we're going to replace our normal round table since we'd already be talking about this with one of our favorite guests and an expert when it comes to UConn athletics.
Yeah, one of the big sports stories breaking this weekend, particularly college sports, is the news that UConn is apparently headed back to their roots in the Big East. And now to talk about that, we're very excited to be joined by Dom Amore of the Hartford Current. Dom, welcome into the show.
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Certainly, I know this is something that we've had you on. And yeah. I guess going all of the basketball seasons, when we first heard there was rumors, innuendo, about UConn leaving, what can you tell us? You're there on the beat, so to speak. What do you know?
Well, it's really almost the exact scenario that I believe we talked about when I was on during basketball season. You know, when UConn's decided that they need to be in the Big East in basketball and the other sports, and they'll take their chances with football if they can figure something out, either as an independent or on another conference. Most likely as an independent, I would say. But essentially, you know, obviously, the formal dominoes have not fallen, but everyone knows that it's just a formality that the Big East presidents will vote to invite UConn this week. UConn's Board of Trustees will then vote to accept. And probably by Thursday, an announcement will be made that UConn's going to join the Big East in all sports other than football. And then it'll be a question of UConn making its exit terms with the American Conference.
Taking a look at this move, this is one, like you said, it's not a total surprise by any means. It had quite some reaction, as you would expect, around the nation by some of the nation's premier sports writers. I know Dennis Dodd of CBS, he said that UConn would bolt the AAC for a traditional basketball home without apparently having a landing place for football. Tells you all you need to know. And then you also had Dan Wolkin of USA Today saying the move signals UConn giving up on football and its hopes of ever joining a power conference. So those are some of the national reactions. What are your thoughts on that? I saw a quote actually tweeted out by UConn football coach Randy Edsall this morning. It was it wasn't a quote from him, but it was a quote from Bill Parcells about 7 a.m. saying, I just try to do the best job I possibly can. Put the blinders on, go to work, and be the best you can possibly be. Once you've done everything that you can possibly do, you've put forth your greatest effort, and then you can live with whatever's next.
Yeah, that's basically where they are in football. You know, I know I was talking to Jim Calhoun yesterday, and you know, he feels that the dream of maybe joining a power conference someday is not dead. If UConn can somehow build against the odds, build a competitive football program, that they might perhaps draw an invite someday. I think that's a long shot. I tend to agree with the Benny Stodds and the Dan Wilkins that this is kind of a white flag on football, that UConn's still going to have a program and it's still going to play high major opponents, but I think they're going to try to play some traditional local opponents like Rutgers and Syracuse and Boston College, you know, out of conference for them. You know, they can certainly play Army as an independent, play teams like that. And in doing so, you know, still attract good players and develop NFL draft picks and do those kinds of things, but they're not going to be part of a major conference. And I think UConn's feeling that if they're not going to get into a Power 5 conference, then they might as well be in the next best thing for their basketball program, which is the Big East, which is what their fans grew up in. I think it's important to point out though, guys, that whatever sense this may make or may not make in the long term or the people outside, you have to be probably in Connecticut to understand just what this means to people there. People who grew up with UConn versus the Big East opponents, they miss that terribly. And really, in a sense, what UConn's doing here, even if it's not the best thing financially in the long term, they're giving the people what they want. They're giving their fans, the people that support them by buying tickets and making donations, what they want. And that is men's basketball games against Villanova, Providence, and teams like that, St. John's, et cetera, you know, and the Big East tournament regardless. That's what they're doing. They're basically, this is about giving the people what they want.
Right. As I've taken a look at this story, and that's what I've tried my best to do, not being a UConn fan and being an outsider, trying to put myself in their fan shoes, in their administration shoes, so to speak. Because I tried to look at it as though if East Carolina had been in a conference with some of our regional foes, such as North Carolina, NC State, South Carolina, whoever, and then had to make a move to another conference, then how would we feel the way they had to separate from St. John's, Seton Hall, et cetera? So looking at it from that perspective is certainly understandable.
Yeah, this really has nothing to do with quality of the basketball or the schools in the American Conference, because there's really nothing wrong with that. This is, the 4 or 5 years I've been covering every game, it's a good conference, and UConn has had a lot of trouble winning or even being competitive in the conference. These are big basketball programs, but it's kind of like being at a party where you don't, or a wedding where you don't know anybody, you know, and that's kind of what it's been for UConn. They've just been a fish out of water at the conference, not in terms of basketball-wise, but just geographically and culturally. And what this is going to do, not only in basketball but other sports, it's going to save on travel and save on the wear and tear for students, on the baseball and softball teams and track teams, and as well as the basketball teams all year long, because they're not going to be traveling from Connecticut to Texas twice and Kansas and in Oklahoma and Florida. They'll have one trip to Nebraska, but other than that, it's pretty much east and northeast and Great Lakes. Pretty easy places to get to.
Dom, I was going to ask you about that very thing, is how much of this, we get all the regional rivalries growing up like I did as a kid in the 80s. The Big East was a really big deal.
Yep.
So I get all that. How much of this, in addition to that, is just adding what you were just saying about the financial piece of it? Because as we were talking when we first met you back in the wintertime with basketball, with the deficits and all that. How much of that played a part in this decision?
I think it played a big part. I mean, I think they're going to realize a lot of cost savings in the long term, so that the exit fees will pay for itself, and as well as, you know, probably filling up, you know, not only their building but the Hartford building, just about every conference game, if not every conference game, which was just not the case in the American Conference. So I think it'll increase their revenue, it'll decrease their costs, and you know, when you're spending $80 million and taking in $40 million, that's exactly what you have to do. So I think the cost, savings is a big part of it. And also, I think, you know, UConn was not comfortable with the TV deal that the AAC had made. It's important to note, I think, that it's not only that the UConn women's games have this great relationship with SNY in New York and wanted to stay there, but also the fact that there was going to be the grant rights clause in the deal. And I think UConn, you know, being in the American Conference is one thing. Being married to it, you know, maybe for 20 years was another. And I think the TV deal on those two levels really troubled UConn and kind of hastened this departure.
Dom, as far as the TV deal, that's what it was stated, that the teams are going to be receiving a little over $7 million thereabouts with the new AAC TV deal. Can you tell us what is the Big East TV deal? I know they have one with Fox Sports.
Yeah,
and
they've got one.
And CBS.
Off the top of my head, I don't know exactly what the numbers are. My guess is it's a little bit less, but not tremendously less. But off the top of my head, I don't know what the numbers are. I don't have that in front of me, unfortunately.
And Dom, as far as it's a thought process that everybody knows UConn has a tremendous basketball program tradition. You have a great coach. Is the idea to focus on getting basketball back to the likes of when you have a great coach, he's doing a great job recruiting, like Dan Hurley,
right,
coming in there, turning the program around? Is it like, hey, let's get back where we know what we know is the Big East. Then we can build there, save the money, in the hopes that, and what I was thinking about this last night when I knew we were going to have you on, is it looks like 4 or 5 years down the road, when some of these TV contracts are done, there's going to be more realignment, and maybe Connecticut by then will build themselves up to the point where they'll say, well, even though football is not great, we'll still take a chance on UConn?
That's exactly right. I think that's the scenario that, and as I mentioned, Jim Calhoun and I were talking about yesterday, that I think they could keep that dream alive. And perhaps get an invite. You know, there's always a possibility, for instance, of Notre Dame going into the ACC in football to join their other sports, and then maybe UConn could be a companion to that. Maybe there's a possibility of a UConn UMass tandem going into a conference somewhere. But those are possibilities. But yeah, I think that's the idea. I think that was the idea of not being overly committed, particularly with a grant and rights deal to the AAC, is that UConn essentially gets into its basketball home and really rebuild its basketball brand and take its chances with football. And maybe 5 or 6 years down the road, that could happen. In the meantime, if that doesn't happen, then, hey, they're in the Big East in basketball where they feel like that's where they belong. So, you know, it may not make a lot of sense outside of Connecticut, but in Connecticut, it's something that everyone has wanted to see for a long time. Maybe you should be careful what you wish for thing, but that's where UConn is.
And Dom, I was going to ask too, what's the fan reaction been? I've seen a lot of the media stuff and some of the local stuff for us.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a lot of East Carolina fans are upset that UConn's leaving, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Fan reaction is basically overjoyed. I think most people wanted this. There are some UConn football fans who are disappointed or angry or worried or whatever about what football is going to become. And there were some in Connecticut who wanted to stay in this conference, thought it was the best course of action. But I think overwhelmingly it's positive.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Dom, as well. What about how does – have you heard any reaction about internally with sources or different things about Randy Edsall? Because the what I took early on yesterday afternoon when I heard about it at lunchtime was that he was upset. Is that fair?
I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that he's upset, but I can't imagine that he's happy about it. I can't imagine that he's not upset about it, that he's not concerned about it. But I also think that Randy, you know, as he crosses 60, I think he's kind of in a mindset, exactly what he spelled out in that tweet, that he's in a mindset that, you know, he's only going to coach so many more years. So he's just going to do the best he can with what he's got and enjoy the day and develop the kids that he can get and take it from and just see where it goes. I think if Randy were 50 years old or 47 or 48 years old, he'd be looking for the exits this morning. But I think at his age, I think he's content to, my guess is that he's content to do the best he can with whatever's thrown at him.
As far as if UConn does stay independent, the number of teams that you'd have to travel to, there's not that many independents out there. I know you can schedule games, but it makes it – if East Carolina, as a kid of the 80s and 90s, we were 20 years we were an independent, and that's why we had a slogan, Dom, back in the 80s, we're going after the best, because we had to play Penn State, we had to play Florida State, Miami – a lot of big name teams, because we didn't have a choice. We had to find teams to schedule.
Yeah, and that's where UConn's going to be. I mean, they do have UMass, a natural partner in the backyard.
Right.
I know their hope is to play Syracuse, BC, Rutgers, you know, teams that they used to play in the Big East. I don't know how realistic that is. I mean, it might be somewhat realistic. I'm sure they'll get some bye games at places where they'll get the clock cleaned, but they'll make some money there doing that. And then they'll probably pick up, and maybe, you know, much like now, every so often they can win a game or two more than they lose and maybe get invited somewhere to Fenway Park or Yankee Stadium for a bowl game if that's the way those bowl games shake out. So, it's being independent is kind of it's an insecure existence, but it can be a very challenging and, I suppose it could be fun, particularly if UConn gets those regional opponents. I think fans will come out to watch UConn play Syracuse and BC and Rutgers, whereas they weren't maybe apt to do that against Tulane and some of the schools in this conference. So it might be marginally better for football, but I think the feeling in Connecticut, let's face it, football couldn't get any worse than it's been, no matter what to do. So.
Dom,
I was going to point out, I'm sorry, I was just going to make this quick point, Bubba. I was going to point that very thing out, Dom, is that a third of Scotty Montgomery's wins were against UConn. So he would only have, if you take away UConn, if they're not in the conference, he'd only have 6 wins. So.
Go ahead, Bubba.
Another potential opponent, Liberty Flames with Hugh Freeze taking over that program, and Liberty had to, I started to say creative, I don't know that creative is the best word, maybe desperate, but they had to schedule New Mexico State twice last season.
Yeah, I'm like, New Mexico is an independent too, right? So
I was going to say New Mexico State, yes.
Right, yeah. So it's going to be a adventurous football existence if UConn is an independent, which I anticipate they will be. It'll be adventurous, but UConn's making a statement here that they're going to do what's best for basketball, and football's going to have to fend for itself.
Well, Dom, I appreciate you very much, and I know Bubba does too, and I hope you won't be a stranger now that we probably won't be in the conference. We'd love to keep up with you, and when we're in the media, we have no control, no say over what happens, right? So we just have to report and give our opinions and try to be as objective as we can.
Well, we've got one more year of basketball and one more year of baseball, so I anticipate being on with you a couple more times.
That's right. All right, Dom, thank you so much. I know you're in not too far from Bubba Winston-Salem. Appreciate you, and have a safe trip back home.
All right. Thank you very much. Goodbye now.
All right. Thank you very much, Dom. Appreciate you very much. And that's going to be hopefully they get mad at me for saying 3 wins against Connecticut came under Scotty Montgomery. But I was just trying to make out the point to Dom that the things are not going well in football. And anyway, that'll be a really interesting fact. Bubba, I know that you and I are going to talk more about the American end of things, how this affects the American. But we have a very special guest, right?
Yeah, we'll take a look at that a little bit later on. But right now, let's go to that interview with Peter Burns from the SEC Network, and we'll catch up with him right now.
One of our favorite guests who started with us last year, very kind, and he's actually coming back on with us, right, Bubba?
Yeah, very excited to have Peter Burns of the SEC Network back on the show. Peter, welcome in.
Wow, thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah, this is it's a good week, man. I get to talk some sports with you guys. I'm over here at TD Ameritrade Park in Omaha where the College World Series is going on. So this is always – I don't know if you guys ever had a chance to do it or if you're big college baseball fans, but it's a bucket list item, man. Even if you aren't, just to see the 8 teams here, always good good baseball, and the weather's good, steaks are good, and the drinks are cold. So it's y'all got to make it out here one day.
Well, our plan is, Peter, we were talking to our guests earlier, our plan, what we're going to do is when our school, East Carolina, we made a pact, when they go, we go. So we know that we're close to getting there, and hopefully it'll be next year. But one of these years, I guess, when we kind of like life, when we least expect it, is when we'll go.
Yeah, I mean, there's no – hey, I was going to say, I mean, y'all were right there, right, in the Super Regional, and then you run into a buzzsaw. And, I mean, Louisville was just so good. What, they ended up scoring 26 runs in that thing. And, you know, we saw them earlier today. They took out Auburn. So that was a really, really good baseball team. So nice to be at least one step away.
That's right. And certainly it's easier path for us to get a national championship in baseball than basketball or football. Speaking of football, we wanted to have you on because after baseball season ended, obviously we talk football all the time, but wanted to have you on. And I think starting out, Bubba, we were talking about the coaching carousel.
Yeah, one of the things that's always so interesting is the coaching carousel, and there were nearly 30, I believe it was, FBS changes. 4 of those right here in the state of North Carolina, our very own Mike Houston replacing Scotty Montgomery at East Carolina, but then you also had Mack Brown making a return to North Carolina, and then Will Healy down at Charlotte, and up in Boone at App State, Scott Satterfield moved on to Louisville, and so you have Elijah Drinkwitz coming in. So what were some of your main takeaways regarding those changes?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think we got to start from the one who's got the title, right? You know, Mack going to UNC and what exactly are they going to be able to do? I know Mack was energized to get back in it. Every time I'd see him at ESPN, he always was just loves the game and wanted to get back into coaching and found an opportunity to do it. I think they needed a little bit of a breath of fresh air, and I know he likes the staff. To me, I mean, it's kind of interesting how the Mike Houston thing played out because I thought Mike was probably going to go to Charlotte, and he ends up going to ECU, and then that opens up a spot for Will Healy. And I think Will's a great coach. I think when you start talking about up-and-comers, and, you know, I don't know if you remember the show Doogie Howser. Y'all might be too young.
Oh, yeah.
Doogie Howser, MD, like, That's who, you know, Will Healy reminds me of, like this young guy that's going to just, you know, show up on the scene and just wreck it. I mean, I can't help it. Every time I spend time with him, I feel energized. Like, I don't know how it's going to work, but I know this guy will be successful. So for Charlotte, who hasn't been to a bowl game or trying to get there in Conference USA, I think that was as good of a hire as I saw to anybody in the country this year.
And Peter, I want to get it locally with Mike Houston. What were your thoughts on the hiring for Mike Houston to East Carolina?
Yeah, I think for him, I mean, it was just a matter of how do you take it to the next level? You know, and Houston was able to do that beforehand of being great on a different level. Now the thing is you need to see does this recruiting pipeline necessarily work in that area? And we hope it does, right? I mean, you know, for him, I think it's kind of the, you know, it had been – a lot of young talent, but it just seemed like they never really took it to that next level. And I think that's the one thing that I've talked to people about Houston, is that he has just been able to develop people year in and year out. So even if you're only getting a 2- or 3-star guy, they play like a 4-star guy by the time his hands are and his team's done with them. So I think that's all you can expect in a team that, you know, it's not going to be an Ohio State or an Alabama or Clemson when recruiting. How do you take kind of the diamonds in the rough and make them shine? And every time Mike Houston has had an opportunity to do it, he's delivered.
You know, I was going to tell you, Peter, as someone that covers the team and I'm able to go to practice, the Montgomery practices are more like a pro practice, and
yeah.
Houston is like, it's like very intense with the, if it's the media, if it's anything regarding practice, there's no doubt about it. There's definitely a big time culture change.
Yeah, and I think for the young guys, you know, young Pirates on that team, is they have to understand, all right, well, let's, you know, how do we shift gears? And I can't tell you how many times, I mean, I just saw it happen in Gainesville. Right, the University of Florida, Dan Mullen, they, you know, there were good players at Florida, but they weren't taking that next step. Dan Mullen comes in and he changes it up. And, you know, for him, he had decided to have more fun at practice, and all of a sudden the players responded better. So, you know, sometimes you just need a new voice from the, the leaderboard or leadership, and that really connects with the players. And, you know, after the last couple of seasons, they needed to have a new voice down at ECU, and now they got it with Mike.
What do you think as far as since you cover the SEC and the SEC network, what are your thoughts on, I know we're limited on how much time we have with you, but can you talk, give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of the East and the West?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me it still ends up being everybody's going to try to get by Alabama and Georgia. Those are the two, you know, the two heavyweights, and I don't think that's a big shock, so no hot takes there. I do think that LSU, though, is what they just added, the old Saints passing game coordinator, a guy named Joe Brady. And he was the guy who really kind of put the offense together for Drew Brees. And that's something that LSU's been missing over the last couple of years, is having a real good offense. So I think that they are killing it on the recruiting trail. I think A&M struggles a little bit. So I think it's going to be a situation where A&M's not going to be great this year, but it's going to be 2020 and beyond that'll be good. I really, believe it or not, I think Missouri is going to be a fun team to watch. Do you remember they got Kelly Bryant from Clemson, so I think he'll be solid. Barry Odom has just gotten those guys rallying around him pretty well, and Derek Dooley as the offensive coordinator has been fantastic last year for Drew Locke. So I think the Missouri Tigers actually might end up being like the second best team in the SEC East. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was actually going to ask you, if you saw Florida or Missouri, South Carolina, who you see as the primary challenger for Georgia.
Yeah, I think Florida's still going to be good. I think Felipe Franks is going to get better under Dan Mullen. But to me, I think Missouri has the upper hand simply because if you look at the cross-divisional opponents that they play, they're going to play Arkansas and Ole Miss. And I think both of those teams are going to struggle this year. So Missouri probably has the easiest of the schedules. And they lost the least amount of players in the entire conference in the transfer portal. So guys are buying into what Barry Odom is selling up there.
And the East, I know with the East – Peter, with Georgia, everything goes through Athens, right, if you want to win the SEC East?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think this is as good of an offensive line that Georgia's had in a long, long time, and that's saying something because they've always been able to run the ball pretty well. And now you look at Jake Fromm going into his third year. I mean, the kid was a natural leader by the time he was 18 years old. So, you know, for Fromm to have that good of an offensive line, you're always going to have, you know, you got DeAndre Swift coming back, so you've got a stud running back. They're just loaded, you know, and they are going to be ready to rock and roll this year. I still have some concerns about their defensive line because last year wasn't great, and I think they missed on a kid or two in recruiting that would have helped them. But to me, they're still the class, and just like Alabama, they're just so damn good. You just got to be able to catch them at the right place at the right time, and not a lot of people have been able to do that.
So, in other words, the SEC championship in Atlanta, it'll be Alabama and Georgia again.
And then it'll probably be a college football national championship between Clemson and Alabama. I mean, that'd be my guess, man. I mean, Clemson's building a monster there. And the Clemson success has hurt South Carolina because now South Carolina used to be able to get a bunch of these kids in the area, and Clemson, all those kids are going to Clemson now. So, you know, it's tough sledding right now for Will Muschamp down in Columbia.
Outside of
Go ahead, Bubba. I'm sorry.
No problem. Outside of Clemson, do you think it's Michigan that may sneak into the playoff this year, or Oklahoma, or who else do you see challenging for the college football playoff?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, with Jalen Hurts going to Oklahoma and the job that Lincoln Riley's done over the last couple of years, it's hard to say that they're not the team to that can take that next step, because, you know, they fired their defensive coordinator. They're trying to get a little bit better there. And so, to me, I think Oklahoma is a team. And there's a distinct chance under Lincoln Riley that they could possibly have back-to-back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners, which would be nuts in that sport. So we'll see if the Sooners are going to be able to do it. And I can't wait for that LSU-Texas game week two, because Tom Herman's team is going to look a little bit better. So is Ed Ogeron's team. That's a monster matchup right off the bat.
I was going to ask you about Texas. A lot of people have them, and I even heard one expert, I think it was on Sirius XM last week, say that he thought Texas would be in the playoffs. So I was going to get your take before we let you go.
Yeah, it's so early, and not to be a cop-out on it, because, you know, I don't know enough about Texas to really dive in. I know that the recruiting class that Herman put together last year was great on the secondary, and I know that's going to be one of the strengths that they had. I just don't know until we get into fall practice. There's so much stuff to wait for and figure out. I mean, for Herman and both Ogeron, that's why that week two game is so big, because I think it'll set the tone for not only the entire rest of the season, but just the next two or three years if they're able to win that big rivalry. Because right now, Texas and LSU really kind of fight for a lot of the same recruits.
No doubt about it. Well, Peter, how can people follow you on social media before we let you go?
Yeah, man. At Peter Burns ESPN is the Twitter account. Then I got an Instagram account as well there, too. And I do a Sirius XM show Monday through Friday, an ESPN show on Sunday mornings, and I anchor the network. So I'm always working and doing something.
Well, it's good to be employed, right?
I'm not going to complain, man, not at all.
Well, thank you so much, Peter. We'll have you back on before the season starts. Thank you so much for your time, and enjoy your time in Omaha.
You guys have a great one. I appreciate the invite on the podcast. Y'all keep killing it.
What a great guy. Thank you very much, Peter. We really love having him on. It's a treat and an honor to have him on, and we are killing it. So he does know. He doesn't know, but he does know we are doing very well. He doesn't know the exact numbers, obviously, but I appreciate his support of the podcast and the show very much. Bubba, you and I have been talking a lot yesterday, and Kyle as well. He was texted. We have a group text for people that don't know. Maybe they don't care, but I do. We have a group text, and the story about the American with UConn leaving, it's not like this has been a big secret. I think maybe you could argue the timing, but there's never going to be a perfect time. It's like a divorce. When's a good time to get a divorce, right? There's never a good time, so I'm not making light of the divorce. People, I'm just saying any kind of separation or any kind of partnership you have with someone, a relationship, it's never good. There's never good timing to leave. And so anyway, I want to get your take on things as far as the American, you think, on the impact. And I'll let you take the floor right now.
Yeah, it's not a huge surprise that the UConn is electing apparently to move back to its roots in the Big East. And that was a conference that the Huskies were part of, had a lot of success in for, I guess, about 3.5 decades. They really, according to what I've seen out there, I'm sure some of their fans may have liked the American, but it seemed as though the masses really did not prefer to be in the American just because they lost some of those rivalries that they had with the more regional opponents such as Seton Hall and St. John's. Obviously, you had Pittsburgh and Syracuse, and those teams had moved on right when UConn was headed to the AAC. Those clubs programs had moved on to the Atlantic Coast Conference. But there were still plenty of programs there left over in the Big East, which is now, of course, a football or football conference. And that conference is one where and its basketball has continued to be very good. You've obviously had Villanova win multiple national championships. And I believe last year they finished fifth in the RPI, one notch ahead of the American. The American finished the season at sixth in the RPI. But both of the leagues are obviously very, very good basketball leagues. But with their roots being in the Big East, with the financial woes and the way they could cut down on travel, even though, like Dom said, they're going to lose some TV money in the short term. And even though they were going to be getting that $7 million from the new TV deal, a lot of their fans were not pleased to be going away from linear TV, where in recent years the Americans had a lot of games on ESPN News and ESPNU. And under this new deal, a lot were going to be on the ESPN Plus platform. And with that being the case, they were not very happy with that, even with the increased amount of money. So with that being the case, all those things led into this move back to the Big East. And as you look at it, I know the Big East has a deal with Fox Sports and CBS where their basketball games, both men and women, particularly men, but apparently, as Dom alluded to in that chat that we had with him a little bit earlier, they'll be able to keep their unique women's basketball deal with the station there in New York. So that's something that was obviously very appealing to the administration up there and head women's basketball coach Gino Auriemma.
Yeah, it's a interesting situation. You know, there's a lot of storylines that can come that you and I could do like a couple hours worth of a podcast. We're not going to do that. Obviously, we try to keep them as short as we can. Sometimes it doesn't always work out that way. But anyway, looking at the situation now, where I'm looking at Bubba is a situation with UConn leaving. Now, I think that there's plenty of teams out there, and I'm not knocking UConn, but I'm kind of like this. If you don't want to be here, then we're not going to keep you back, you know, hold you back. If you don't want to be here, that's fine. I don't, just judging by what I've read on the, looking on the outside, I don't know the inside. I don't think they were ever happy being in the American. I think they kind of just tolerated, you know, the East Carolinas of the world and that sort of thing. And Tulane, I mean, oh my God, you know, but a lot of these programs are very good. The basketball league, what's crazy to me is I understand the geography issue and the money. I get that. And I know you give the fans what they want. And you have to make decisions in the now and to some extent. However, if you look at it, football is what, you know, serves the drink. And as much as I love basketball and baseball and all the other sports, I'm just concerned. If I'm being objective here, believe it or not, for Connecticut, because they could have potentially made it where they'll never be in a Power Five league ever. You know, we don't know if Americans ever going to be a Power League, but let's say hypothetically the commissioner gets it done, we're a Power League, and then what happens if there's a lot of what ifs out there? But like I was making the point earlier, I think Connecticut's trying to focus on basketball, get basketball good, then they can focus on football. But the reality is, I don't think basketball is that far off, Bubba. I think that the football is what they drastically need to improve on.
Yeah, the basketball program there, even though it's been down in recent years, especially by their standards, having won four national titles since 1999, right. It's a tough pill to swallow. I'm sure even playing the likes of SMU and Tulane and UCF and teams that were not traditional rivalries for UConn, that attendance would not have suffered as greatly had they been playing the way they had played in the 15 or so years prior. I mean, you remember their first year in the America under Kevin Ollie, they won that national title. So I think it's kind of a combination of the two, the opponents and the product not being what it had been prior to them joining the American and after that first year or so in the American. But I can see it from their perspective, and it's funny how when we talk about regionality and how it affects or how it used to be in conferences, and that used to be a real sticking point, and then it became where it was more just about the market size and
right.
So forth, where you had teams like Boise State joining the Big East and stuff that would have never made sense back in the quote old days. So, but yeah, as you look at things, I mean, Dennis Dodd, that quote that I read from him earlier, or tweet rather, I think like you said, them choosing to leave the American, a very good basketball conference, the sixth best in the country, for a marginally better conference last year in the number five league in the Big East, that just speaks to their focus on basketball and their focus on those regional rivalries that can hopefully help them draw better and then recruit better and so on and so forth. And then maybe down the road, football can fare well enough as an independent where, with improved basketball success, getting back to where they have been, then maybe the P5 dream is still alive for the Huskies. But that's something as far as football is concerned. Outside of that year of view, under Randy Edsall, right before he left to go to Maryland, when they went to the BCS game out in the Fiesta Bowl, and but outside of a few seasons, they haven't had a ton of success in football. So it's easy to see from their perspective, when you won four national titles in basketball, why they would be so eager to go back to the roots in the Big East, and especially with the Big East still having such a solid product in basketball.
Well, here's another thing, Bubba, we need to mention is the fact you take a team like, I'll tell you a perfect team like Temple. Temple was initially kicked out of the Big East because of they were good in basketball, but pretty much everything else they were not, at least my memory. But you look at a situation like Connecticut, they be careful because I guess it doesn't matter now if they're going to leave the Big East, but let's say hypothetically that they go to a Power 5 school, conference rather, as a school. They've got to make sure football is top-notch. So in this day and age, football has to be really good. You know, you take a team like Temple, another local team in our area in North Carolina, with Duke. There was a News and Observer article that I think it was around 2006. They were worried they were going to be kicked out of the ACC because football was so bad. They had all those in that early 2000s, I think it was four straight losing seasons. Imagine being a fan where you never saw your team win a game in 4 years. Your player, you played football, Bubba. Imagine playing every game of your college career, never winning a game. Things are really bad in Durham. And so UConn better be careful that they put too much emphasis on basketball. And I'm not, and you know me, Bubba, how much I love basketball. But the way the landscape is now with college sports, football, they better find a way to make that good.
Yeah, with like you're saying, and that Duke program was obviously very poor for decades, and then David Cutcliffe has worked minor miracles, so to speak, there, because most folks probably didn't think he was going to accomplish what he accomplished. Most people would probably think I'm a liar, but I actually did feel as though he would have some success there because of his background and what he had done at Ole Miss, even though he got the axe there, and wrongfully so. But not to get off on a tangent, talking about this move, and as far as UConn is concerned, obviously scheduling as an independent in 2019, or I guess not 2019, but in 2020 or whatever it will be for them, it's an entirely different ball game as what it was, and obviously 3 decades ago when the Pirates were scheduling as an independent.
Right.
So with that being the case, they needed to start yesterday. And the reason I say that, you take a look at, like, last year you had the Liberty Flames, which we'll talk more about here in a minute. But Liberty, they had to play New Mexico State twice because of just the challenges that you face as an independent in the FBS ranks when
right.
it comes to scheduling games. So it would be interesting to see if UConn potentially has to play somebody twice when they have that first season as an independent.
And maybe we can schedule them as a non-conference game, right?
yeah.
But that's always an option. But Let's talk about, we've talked a lot about Connecticut, and I'm not one of these guys that's anti, you know, a school's got to do what's in their best interest of East Carolina. Let me say this. I want to make a point, and then let's talk about, before we wrap everything up, we want to talk about teams and all that kind of stuff, potentially in American, because that seems to be the hot topic on social media. I just want to bring up the point about East Carolina, Bubba, that when we were talking to Dom, and I know you alluded to it, but I'm just trying to think about us, to break it down more now that you and I, it's you and me, about East Carolina. Can you imagine if East Carolina went back to Conference USA, but especially, I think this would be not, and we would never do this, but never say never, I know, but imagine us going back to the days of the Colonial. And you know, that's sentimental for me. There was a lot of good, you know, being an independent in football, and we had a lot of good rivalries geographically. That's what I'm getting at. So don't anybody think that I want to go back to the Colonial. I love the Colonial. It was a great league for us at the time, but it just doesn't make sense for us to go back to that league, right? And I understand people say, well, basketball, as far as, you know, the league is great with the Big East. But I'm just saying, I think it was, to me, I think it was the fans wanted it, so they did it. I think it makes sense financially, but I think in the short term, it's great. I'm just curious about the long term, and just seeing the East Carolina angle, it would not make any sense, because there's been fans that say during the conference era, we should go back to Conference USA, and some people are even saying the CAA. I think that makes no sense whatsoever. I think it was just, we were in a bad, in a really bad place. So what do you think?
Oh, it's you're comparing two totally different things. It's not an apples to apples comparison for sure. Them making the move back to the Big East, like I said, they're still going to one of the premier basketball conferences in the country, the number five conference. And you think about the way that league was, and yes, you have Syracuse and Pittsburgh and some that have moved on, it's still a remarkable league. And they still have their conference tournament there at the world's most famous arena, as they like to call it, Madison Square Garden. So there's a lot of appeal for sure. As you look at this from an unbiased perspective, I mean, yes, I hate to lose an opponent like UConn in men's and women's basketball. And we'll talk a little bit more as far as some of the impact on the women's side of things, and new East Carolina head coach Kim McNeil, who will be a guest later on this week on the show. And then on the football side of things, obviously you're losing what had been a win four out of the five times the Pirates had played them. And like you referenced in that interview, not trying to be cute or funny. It was just a fact. Even though the Pirates had been down, that was one that we had been able to win over the last few years. But kind of moving on, you want to take a look at some of the potential replacements for UConn, and depending on how Commissioner Mike Oresko and company decide to go about things?
Absolutely. Let's go for it.
One of the programs that you immediately saw mentioned on social media and in these various articles that some of the national writers were putting out was Army. Of course, you already have Navy as a football-only member in the American, and so that would make it where you have a very strong program over the last 3 to 4 years, and what Coach Munkin is doing up there. They've actually won that rivalry matchup, I guess, 2 years in a row now with Navy, and have become much more competitive and have actually – although their non-conference schedule isn't extremely challenging. I say non-conference, excuse me, they're an independent, but their schedule isn't extremely challenging. They do have, I think, maybe even multiple FCS foes on there with the likes of Lafayette and others. There's still no denying what Coach Munkin has done up there in West Point, and so that's something that would be very appealing to have that Army-Navy matchup. It's part of the American, and with all the eyeballs that it has on it. And I know some people will say, well, that's already the case because you already have Navy in the conference. but then some other teams that you've seen thrown out there. Buffalo Bulls have had a lot of success in recent years, both in football and basketball, so they've been mentioned. You've also had App State, one of our in-state brethren has been mentioned. That program has obviously been so successful on the gridiron down through the years. As you look at them, they have tremendous fan support in football, excellent atmosphere there at Kid Brewer Stadium. But in men's basketball, they've struggled just like the Pirates have. So that's something that would be a red flag against the Mountaineers. But as we know, this thing's driven by football, and even though this is something that's not necessarily, that would make it a questionable move with me, because we know how it is to be looked at from this perspective. But we know how one of the things that would be held against Appalachian is undoubtedly their location and the market size. But what I would say about that is their football fan base is very much like East Carolina, not quite as big, but very passionate, very rabid, and then they certainly tune in on ESPN or whatever the platform is when their Mountaineers are playing, and they play a very entertaining style of football, tremendous defense, and then really run the football well. And with the success they've had, it's not far-fetched at all to imagine other people wanting to watch the Mountaineers, and I certainly expect that to be the case under Elijah Drinkwitz. And I tell you, Dave, another team in addition to App State that I have actually not seen mentioned, they may have been mentioned by someone, but I have not seen it, and that's somewhat surprising, even though they are a recent transitional team to FBS, and that's the Liberty Flames. New head coach there in Lynchburg is Hugh Freeze, of course, the former Ole Miss coach who got into some trouble, but with Hugh Freeze being there, they opened the year this year. They have Syracuse, a ACC foe, coming to Williams Stadium. Williams Stadium is 25,000 seats now, so fairly comfortable to the team. And they draw fairly well, from what I recall. They certainly draw as well as some of the teams already in the American. And then they have teams like Virginia Tech, BYU, UVA, North Carolina, et cetera, scheduled to come to Lynchburg over the next 8 to 10 years. And then you look on the basketball side of things. This year they made it to the round of 32. They won a first-round game against Mississippi State and were very competitive against in-state foe Virginia Tech as they attempted to make it to the Sweet 16.
No doubt, and that's what I'm looking at, Bubba, is the very fact of looking at a team like that, the infrastructure, the leadership. They've got more money than it's unbelievable. They already have an indoor practice facility. They're building and building and building and building.
They're building. They have a beautiful baseball stadium.
Yeah.
It seats about 2,500. I've seen it. And then they also have the Vine Center, an arena that seats 10,000. But they're also, I was reading up on this earlier this morning, they have the Liberty Arena that's being built adjacent to the Vine Center. So it's going to be the home to men's and women's basketball and volleyball. So what they're going to do, they're actually going to have two options as far as where they play their men's basketball games. If it's a very big game against the like of a UVA or Virginia Tech or someone like that, where they would draw more than 4,000, then they could move it over to the Vine Center. But the new arena is going to seat 4,000 or slightly over 4,000. So they're going to have a state-of-the-art arena with some of those modern amenities, and then it's also going to have what should be a very good atmosphere with the fans close to the court. I would imagine it's probably going to be, I think it will be probably similar to something like what Campbell has, but with the success that basketball program's had and the athletics department as a whole, which you referenced, I would not be surprised to see Liberty get some mention.
No doubt about it, and Liberty is great. I think I want to make this point, and I think we're going to have to. I was going to tell you I'm almost at the track, so we're going to have to add some later on. I'll edit this out right now. I was going to tell you, Bubba, I think one point I wanted to make is, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Would it be smart? This is something that came to mind, so I'm going to mention it. You know, we're throwing things around here. Well, this is a brand new story, so something we can, why not find a, not only a great team, obviously, to play replace UConn, why not be the time now where you pick a, say, for when you mentioned Liberty, why not do an expansion to 14 teams, add three teams to expand to, like, well, I'm not saying add three, just three teams that were desperate. I'm just saying adding, if you could add three quality teams to do expansion at the same time, and that would help the conference.
I'm sure they're looking at all options. As far as that goes, you have to remember that that's going to divide the pie that many more ways. So,
well, yeah.
If you were to add that many teams, how much are they going to bring to the table, and how much are they going to potentially allow us to renegotiate a TV deal where we're going to make more money, because that's one of the things that one of the reasons why the Big 12 chose not to expand and keep their membership where it was, because they didn't really feel like it was somebody that was going to bring enough to the table to really allow them to renegotiate things to the point where it would make sense financially with the TV deal.
And the TV folks are the ones that, remember, they came to the conference and told them not to. Basically, they were going to lose money by doing it. So the best thing they could do is just what they did, was they stayed steady and hold par, if you will. And that's what they did on that. But
the thing about this that makes this a little trickier is that it's a all sports member leaving. It's not a football only or a basketball.
Right.
Excuse me, not a basketball only, but like, you know, with Navy being a football only, and then Wichita State came on board a couple of years ago. So it obviously having 11 versus 12 makes things a lot more challenging than a whole different ball game than making a jump from 11 to 14.
Yeah, and we're going to see how that plays out. I think we're going to look and see that they're going to have their best interests at heart, and I think people are going to see that they're going to work really hard behind the scenes, and I imagine they already knew this was going to happen. I'm sure that Oresco already had a plan in place. I can't imagine the league not expecting UConn. You know, they probably sensed with the whole negotiations of TV, wouldn't you think, Bubba? I think that's kind of when we found out, right, the TV deal. We knew that they were going to have that they may be leaving.
Yeah, like we said before that interview with Dom, this is no great surprise. Mike Oresco, he's obviously a very sharp individual, and I'm sure with this, I mean, he had a pulse of things. He knew that this was quite possibly going to transpire. So with that being the case, I'm sure he has his contingency plans, and we'll be very interested to see how things unfold and what direction our conference choose to go.
Yeah, they're going to have to, it'll be interesting, but I think at the end of the day, we'll see that they'll have a good plan. That's the great thing, is there's plenty of teams that we can talk about. We can do more discussion here in a little bit. But I think that they're going to be, and I can't wait to talk to Kyle this coming week. We'll talk more about this UConn story as it develops, as we were talking about. Kim McNeil will be our guest, one of our guests with Pirate. We're going to talk about Lady Pirates, and they're very excited about the Pirate program, having her here with staff. Just proud of the program, and I think this helps out their program. We'll be talking about that. And it's going to be really a lot of fun. I cannot wait, Bubba.
As far as the women's basketball side of things, with UConn exiting the conference, that's what obviously down the road, I guess maybe year two or year three of Kim McNeil is going to be a lot easier to compete for a conference championship sooner. Not easy, but a lot easier for sure. And but at the same time, I'm sure on one hand, she hates to see a program like that leaving the league because it gives you so much credibility. But then USF has been very solid in recent years. There's been a game or two where they've competed with UConn pretty well. And Tulane looked like they were going to knock them off. So even though we're losing, a big juggernaut like UConn women's basketball, there are some solid clubs still remaining in the conference, and it's certainly still going to be a viable league for sure.
No doubt about it, and we'll. I think there's a lot of great teams out there, more great options, and obviously, Bubba, let's talk about promotion now. We got a lot of great guests coming up. Plus, we got a lot of things coming our way, right?
Yeah, we do. Like I already mentioned, Kim McNeil will be on later in the week, and then we'll also catch up with track and field coach Kurt Kraft to talk about his big recruiting haul of, I think it was 25 new additions to the program. And then we'll also be beginning here the second week of July. We'll have our 50 Pirates and 50 Days feature, where we'll talk to a host of former football players and coaches from down through the years at ECU. And then we also, toward the latter part of July, we'll be beginning Friday morning football, where we'll talk both high school, college, and professional football. And then toward the end of the month, we'll also have another live event at Professor O'Cool's, which we'll talk more about as it gets closer.
Yes, we will. We're going to have a great time with everyone, and just looking forward to a real busy summer. And obviously, we're going to try really hard to take care of folks. So when it comes to a lot of great entertainment, the summer months are kind of slow, but we got a lot of great stuff ahead, Bubba.
Yeah, we do. Another guest that we have that I failed to mention, obviously on Monday, that's what we will have the College World Series Championship going on between Michigan and Vanderbilt. Eric Backich, Cliff Godwin's former teammates, he and Nick Schnabel are leading the Wolverines in that matchup, and we'll catch up with Coach Backich here in the next few weeks after he's had an opportunity to allow the smoke to settle, so to speak, on what will hopefully be a national championship out in Omaha with the Wolverines. So look very much forward to having him on, and then a lot of other things headed your way as well, as we'll continue to talk to various beat writers and play-by-play voices and what have you from around the country. Give us a follow on social media, and you can follow us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at TheSportsObjective, like and follow us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We very much appreciate you tuning in to the Sports Objective Podcast. For Dave Richmond, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.